Chapter 31. The District Bar Council had almost 100,000 members, about half of whom worked in the city. The other half were scattered through all 50 states. Since membership, as well as the payment of dues, was mandatory, the administration of the bar's activities was a challenge. A staff of 40 worked diligently in its headquarters on Wisconsin Avenue, keeping up with the names and addresses of its members, planning educational courses and seminars, promulgating standards of professional responsibility, publishing a monthly magazine, and dealing with disciplinary matters. Complaints against judges and lawyers were directed to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, where one Margaret Sanchez managed a staff of 5 lawyers, 3 investigators, and half a dozen secretaries and assistants. To receive a proper review, a complaint had to first be filed in writing. Often, though, the first hint of trouble came by phone, and usually from another lawyer who did not want to get too involved. After several efforts, Edwin Mossberg from down in Charleston managed to get Ms. Sanchez on the line. He told her of his encounter with one Mark Upshaw, a young man claiming to be a lawyer but apparently using an alias. Mossberg had checked and found no record of such a person in the bar's directory, or in the phone book, or online, or anywhere else, for that matter. He described in general Upshaw's negligence in allowing an important statute of limitations to expire, and his subsequent trip to Charleston to beg Mossberg to keep quiet. Ms. Sanchez was captivated by the story. Complaints of unauthorized practice were rare, and almost all involved paralegals who either deliberately or inadvertently stepped out of bounds and did things that only their bosses were supposed to do. A quick reprimand usually got them back in line without substantial damage to the clients. Mossberg was reluctant to file an official complaint, said he didn't have time to fool with it, but just wanted to tip off the bar and let it know there was a problem. He emailed a copy of Upshaw's business card with the name of his firm, its address on Florida Avenue, and a phone number. Ms. Sanchez thanked him for his time. The story was made even more interesting by the fact that it was the second phone call dealing with the law firm of Upshaw, Parker, and Lane. The previous week, a local ambulance chaser named Frank Jepperson had unofficially tipped her off that one Zola Parker had tried to hustle one of his clients in a hospital cafeteria. Ms. Sanchez knew Jepperson from 2 prior complaints about his own unethical behavior. Jepperson had sent her a copy of Zola Parker's business card. Sitting at her desk, Ms. Sanchez compared the copies of the 2 cards. Same firm, same address, different phone numbers. A quick review of the bar's directory verified that neither Mark Upshaw nor Zola Parker was a member. She summoned a member of her staff, Chap Gronsky, whose official title was Assistant Disciplinary Counsel, and gave him the 2 copies of the firm's business cards. An hour later, Gronsky was back with some research. He said, "I've checked the criminal dockets and found 14 cases in which Mark Upshaw is the attorney of record. Nothing on Zola Parker. There's a guy named Todd Lane who's been active for the past 3 months. Found his name on 17 entries. There's probably more. The odd thing is that there is nothing prior to January of this year."
"Sounds like a startup, a brand new firm in town," she said. "Just what we need."
"Shall I open a file?" Gronsky asked.
"Not yet. There's no official complaint. When are they due in court again?"
Gronsky flipped through some printouts.
"Looks like Upshaw has a sentencing hearing for a DUI client in Division 16 at 10 in the morning.
Ease over and take a look. Have a chat with Upshaw and let's see what he has to say for himself."
At 10 the next morning, Chap Gronsky was sitting in Judge Cantu's courtroom watching the parade. After the 3rd guilty plea and sentencing, the clerk called the name of Jeremy Plankmore. A young man in the back row stood nervously, looked around for help, and stutter-stepped down the aisle. As he approached the bench, alone, Judge Cantu asked, "Are you Mr. Plankmore?"
"Yes, sir."
"Says here your lawyer is Mark Upshaw. I don't see him in the courtroom."
"No, sir, me neither. I've been calling him for 3 days and he won't answer his phone."
Judge Cantu looked down at a clerk who shrugged as if she knew nothing. He looked at the assistant prosecutor, who gave the same shrug. "Very well, step aside, Mr. Plankmore, and I'll deal with it later.
Let's see if we can get Mr. Upshaw on the phone. He must have got his schedule mixed up. Plankmore sat in the front row, frightened and confused. Another lawyer moved in for the kill. Gronsky reported back to Ms. Sanchez. They decided to wait 2 days until Mr. Lane's next scheduled court appearance. Jeremy Plankmore decided to dig a bit deeper. With a friend as extra muscle, he waited until later that afternoon and visited the address on his lawyer's business card. Upshaw had charged him $1,000, $800 of which he'd paid in cash. The balance was in his pocket, but he had no plans to hand it over. Indeed, his plans were to confront Mr. Upshaw and demand a refund. At the address on Florida Avenue, he couldn't find the law firm. At the Rooster Bar, he and his friend bought beers and chatted with the bartender, a heavily tattooed young lady named Pammy. Pammy had little to say, especially when Jeremy started poking around with questions about Mark Upshaw and a law firm in the building. She claimed to know nothing and seemed irritated by the questions. Jeremy got the impression she was stonewalling, and he wrote his name and phone number on the back of a paper napkin. He handed it to Pammy and said, "If you bump into Mark Upshaw, tell him to call me, or else I'll report him to the bar council."
"Like I said, I don't know the guy," Pammy replied.
"Yeah, yeah, but if you happen to meet him..."
Jeremy and his friend left the bar. Sniffing a jackpot, Darryl Cromley moved with extraordinary speed. He paid $3,500 to a retired doctor for an expedited review of Ramon's medical records. In conclusion, the expert wrote, in language blunter than Dr. Kuntz's, that the actions taken by the hospital staff and attending doctors fell far below acceptable standards of care and constituted gross negligence. Darryl grabbed the two-page summary, attached it to his two-page lawsuit, and filed it on behalf of his client, Ramon R. Taper, against attorney Mark Upshaw and his firm in the Circuit Court of the District of Columbia. The gist of the lawsuit was obvious. Attorney Upshaw had sat on a clear case of medical negligence and allowed the statute of limitations to expire, thus extinguishing any chance of recovery from the hospital and its doctors. Ramon was seeking actual and punitive damages that totaled $25 million. Darryl mailed a copy of the lawsuit to the address at the Rooster Bar and paid a process server $100 to personally deliver it to Mr. Upshaw as required. At the bar, though, the process server had trouble finding the firm. He assumed it was housed somewhere above the bar. He counted three levels up there, but the only visible door, one to the side, was locked. Inside the bar, he asked around and was told by the manager that there was no such law firm. No one seemed to know anything about Mark Upshaw. The process server tried to leave the lawsuit with the manager, but he adamantly refused to accept it. For the next 3 days, the process server tried to find either the law firm or Mark Upshaw, but had no luck. At no time did Darryl Cromley consider checking with the district bar council to determine if Mark Upshaw was a member. The law firm had adopted the strategy of mobility. It left the building each morning and drifted around the city, from coffee shops to libraries to bookstores to outdoor cafes, anywhere the partners could camp out with their laptops and comb the white pages for more clients. An observer might have been curious as to what all three were working on with such diligence, mumbling softly to each other, offering names and addresses while their assortment of cell phones vibrated in a muted chorus of neglected calls. The three were certainly in demand, yet they rarely took a call. Such an observer, and there were none, would not have a clue. Todd was behind the bar late one night, tidying things up as the last of the customers paid their tabs and left. Maynard, who rarely came to the Rooster Bar, appeared from the kitchen and asked, "Where's Mark?" Todd replied, "Upstairs. Get him down here. We need to talk." Todd knew it was trouble. He called Mark, who was two floors above him in the firm's office, laboring through the white pages with Zola and adding names to their class action. Within minutes, Mark entered the bar. They followed Maynard to an empty booth. Their boss was scowling, in a foul mood, and wanted answers. Maynard tossed a business card on the table and asked, "Ever hear of a guy named Chapman Grunsky? Goes by Chap?" Mark picked up the card and felt sick.
"Who is he?"
Todd asked. Maynard said, "An investigator for the District Bar Council. He's been around twice looking for the two of you. Mr. Mark Upshaw, Mr. Todd Lane. Don't know these guys. I do know Mark Frazier and Todd Lucero, so what the hell's going on?" Neither knew what to say, so Maynard continued. He tossed a napkin on the table and said, "A guy named Jeremy Plankmore left this yesterday, said he was a client, said he was looking for his lawyer, a Mr. Mark Upshaw." He tossed another card on the table and said, "And this guy has been by three times, a little guy named Jerry Coleman. He's a process server for some lawyer who wants to sue you and your law firm." He tossed another card on the table and said, "And this is from a father who said his son hired you, Todd, to handle a simple assault case. Said you didn't show up for court." Maynard stared at them and waited. Mark finally said, "Well, it's a long story, but we're in a bit of a jam." Todd said, "We can't work here any longer, Maynard. We need to disappear."
"You got that right, and I'm going to help you. You're fired. I can't have these people harassing the other bartenders. They're tired of covering for you guys anyway. Next thing I know, the cops will be stopping by with all sorts of questions, and I don't have to tell you the cops make me real nervous. I don't know what you're doing, but the party's over. Get out."
"I understand," Todd said.
"Can we keep the upstairs for a month?" Mark asked. "We need some time to wrap up some things."
"Wrap up what? You guys have been running a fake law firm, and now half the city's looking for you. What are you doing?"
Todd said, "Don't worry about the cops. They're not involved. Let's just say we have some disgruntled clients."
"Clients? But you're not lawyers, right? Last I heard, you guys were in law school getting ready to graduate."
"We dropped out," Todd said, "and we've been hustling clients in the criminal courts, all fees in cash."
"That's pretty stupid if you ask me."
"No one asked you," Mark thought, but let it go. And yes, at the moment it seemed pretty stupid. He said, "We'll pay you $1,000 in cash for another 30 days and you'll never see us." Maynard took a sip of ice water and glared at them. Todd, stung, said,
"Look, Maynard, I've worked for you for, what, the last 3 years. You can't just fire me like this."
"You're fired, Todd. Got that? Both of you. I can't have this place crawling with investigators and pissed off clients. You've been lucky that someone hasn't walked in and recognized you."
"Just 30 days, Mark said, "and you'll never know we're here."
"I doubt that."
He took another sip and kept glaring. Finally, he asked,
"Why do you want to stay here when everybody seems to know your address?"
Mark said,
"We need a place to sleep and finish our work, and they can't get to us. The door to the upstairs is always locked."
"I know. That's why they hang around the bar hassling the other bartenders."
Todd said,
"Please, Maynard, we'll be out by the 1st of June.
$2,000 cash," Maynard said.
"Okay, and you'll keep our cover?" Mark asked.
"I'll try, but I really don't like all this attention."